the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Anne-Marie Allen has written an absolutely fascinating book, Serve, My Lost Years at the Heart of Ireland's Opus Dei. And it is an extraordinary story about being taken as a teenager and been put into servitude, almost been like a prisoner. And then I suppose what's really interesting is to discover that Anne-Marie then spent a lot of time in the prison service subsequently. Anne-Marie Allen, thank you very much for taking the time to join us. Just for those who might know Opus Dei, yeah, the work of God, but what exactly is Opus Dei for people who are not familiar with it?
Well, Opus Dei is an ultra-conservative Catholic group approved by the Catholic Church. Its idea is that it would that people could join Opus Dei and find holiness in everyday life. That's the idea of it. I think that's okay, but it turned into a really strong organization where I, as a member, you know, every aspect of my life was regulated, monitored, and so on. That's when I became a member of Opus Dei.
You were imprisoned from the age of 15, effectively, weren't you?
Yeah, I was in captivity, spiritual captivity.
And physical
psychological
captivity.
And physical. Yeah, I would agree with that, yes. From the age of... I joined when I was 16 and I left when I was 22, yeah. So I was... I was very much overtaken by them, yeah, and very much in captivity.
What brought you to it? Were you a sort of a good Catholic girl in West Cork when you decided to join?
Well, Ballyvaughan is actually mid-Cork, Matt, just
to give
you a geography class.
Well, I know it's on the road down to Kerry and I've been there many times, so my apologies.
I'm teasing you, Matt. I was born in the UK, you know, part of the Irish Catholic community there. Came back to Ireland when I was 8 and part of the Irish Catholic groups and family in where I came from. And I had some members of my family in religious orders. Yeah.
So how did you get into Opus Dei?
There was an ad in a newspaper for looking for people or for young girls to go and do this course as a chef. I had wanted to be a chef. I had cooked at home. I had worked in a local hotel. So I really liked food and the science of food and all that. So my intention was to do my Leaving Cert and maybe go to a third level college. But these two women arrived to Ballyvourney one day. It was All Ireland Sunday, 1978. I think Dublin and Kerry were playing in the All Ireland, and they were these two very well dressed, well presented women, and they were. They came to interview me in my house. My parents were very attracted by what they had to offer, which was a 2-year diploma course. I would receive £5 pocket money. I would be looked after. I would be cared for. And I'd leave at the end with a diploma in institutional catering and a guaranteed job. And that was a sweetener.
In 1970s Ireland, which was pretty impoverished at the time,
yeah,
the guarantee of a job was a big selling point.
It was huge, that I would get a job when I left. So that was, and my parents thought I'd go there and I'd be safe.
And did they say it was Opus Dei?
There was a mention of Opus Dei, and my father was well read, you know. He had known about them, there was some bit of a. I remember them talking about Franco, and the founder's allegiance to Franco. And I remember I didn't know what all this was about. My dad would have said afterwards that we did a subsequent interview in Ballygloonan Park. And my father would have said that he was charmed that day by them himself, you know, even with his cynicism over it, they charmed the pants off him. And he came away and he said, this is great. So I went there only a few weeks later. I think it was a couple of days after John Paul II was elected as Pope. He had come from Poland, you know, there was a whole new kind of energy around, you know, of change. And I remember going there that time. Yeah.
And discovering almost immediately that it wasn't as had been sold to you.
It took a couple of weeks before we realised we were young. I had left school. The extended family weren't happy that I had left school. Some of the other girls on the course started kicking up basically and saying this isn't what we were sold or what we were told. We were basically running the conference centre in Ballygloonan Park. and a student residence in Rockbarton Road in Salt Hill, a male student residence. And that's where I spent the bulk of my 2 year course, working there from half eight in the morning till 9 o'clock at night, doing the catering, the laundry and the housekeeping for the male student residence with two other girls.
And from there then you went?
So, I joined Opus Dei then. I was a student.
Officially as such, is it?
Yeah.
Because you were a student until that stage, is it? Okay.
That was a 2 year course. So I was a student until June 1980, but I became a member of Opus Dei not long after I went there. I was 16. I think it might have been 8 months there, and I became an assistant numerary, which would be the lowest grade of member in the organisation. So it's a very structured, hierarchical organisation. You have the men's section, you have the women's section, you have the society, the pre-section, there are three sections. And then within the women's section, you have the numeraries, and then you have the assistant numeraries. And we were the ones that provided the free domestic care to the residences and the elite of Opus Dei. Okay.
But you were then forced to live a life which is quite extraordinary, as in of extreme hardship.
Yeah.
Of in large enforced silences.
Yeah.
Of forced prayer. I mean, the details you give, for example, of the rosaries that you have to do, of benediction, sleeping on the floor once a week without a pillow.
Sleeping on the floor with a pillow, and then one night a week without a pillow, you know. And then, you know, obviously there was the mortification as well. There was the chain and the whip.
Explain this, please.
Okay, so, you know, we used to hear anecdotes about the founder. He used to mortify himself regularly. I know you get these anecdotes of blood on walls and stuff like that. But so we had to do it. I was given a bag and a chain at the age of 16. I was told, You have to use this. The founder wants us to do it. It's a way of managing our desires, and, you know, offering our pain up to God. So it was a chain that you tie on your leg, with barbed wire on the inside. You tie the tie on the inside in your inner thigh, and you'd wear it for 2 hours a day. The founder said, because we work so hard, 2 hours a day was enough. And so did that every day, and then on a Saturday.
So how sore is that?
It's really uncomfortable, you know, but then the thing, the, in order...
Does it cut into the flesh?
Yes, it does, yeah. It does, yeah.
Did it ever become infected?
No, for me it didn't. Other people, you know, we all have different skin, so everyone has had a different experience. But yeah, I'm not so sure if I've ever dealt with that, with the mortification side of it. To be honest with you, I'm not so sure if I've met it head on. You know, I think it's too painful to go back there. Matt, I'll be honest with you, we used to whip ourselves in on a Saturday on the back and back area to the Hail Holy Queen, you know.
And this sounds like some sort of mad cult.
Well, you said that, not me.
It does sound like that.
Yeah, and like you'd be passing by your bedroom, you'd hear people doing it, you know. And then you had to work the 14-hour, you know, from 8:30 in the morning or 8 o'clock in the morning till whatever time at night on top of all of that. And you'd be wearing the chain. You'd be bringing the hoover and the cleaning baskets up the stairs and the sheets and the towels and the laundry. And the hoover would be banging off your leg. You know, it wasn't as if you were just standing there wearing it. You were wearing it working, you know. So that was just the, yeah.
But what did that do to your physical health? What did it do to your mental health?
I know my physical health started to suffer very quickly. I was only in Opus Dei maybe 6 weeks and I got the shingles. I remember being told not to tell my parents. But I remember I continued working. I never rested during that time. I suffered gynecologically. I was depressed. I'd go head to toe in pins and needles. I suffered with my knees quite badly because we used to walk on our knees making the beds and brushing the stairs and so on. So physically it was difficult. And then, you know, I had panic attacks. I had a lot of panic attacks. I used to cry every single night. I'm not a crier, but I cried every single night. My nickname was Baggy Eyes because I cried so much. You know, I was not happy at all. I think I was severely depressed, you know.
Why did you stay? Did they physically prevent you from leaving, or was it that they made you feel guilty about the idea of leaving because you would be leaving God's service?
They'd say the door is always open, you can walk through, but you were so disempowered, you didn't know how to walk through the door. There was double doors at the end of one of the landings, and I never saw them open, actually, but I used to imagine myself running through them and down the laneway, and there was two big steel gates, and I knew how to get there, but I didn't know how to go beyond it. I was so disempowered. I didn't know how to buy a bus ticket. I never held money. I didn't know how to make a phone call. So you were told, it was pure guilt and shame that, you know, you're nothing without us. No one will want you. And when you leave, your family will go, nothing will come of you. You'll never make a good relationship. You know, you'll be very unhappy without us. And you'll go to hell and you'll bring everyone with you. And there was two bishops involved in my case at one point. I won't mention their names. And I was told they'll go to hell as well.
What do you mean in your case?
In 1981, Cardinal Hume issued some directives to Opus Dei.
Cardinal Hume is the British cardinal,
Yeah. And I think some Irish parents, if I'm not mistaken, had gone to him and told him about that they had recruited their children. So I think he issued some directives that they weren't to recruit children under 14. Or under 16 or something like that. So my parents, especially my dad, got wind of it. We had some family that were in religious orders in the UK who sent the information home. And my father then started a deal with Opus Dei trying to get me home. And so two bishops got involved. I remember that one of them wrote to me. I never saw his letters because our post was opened. Our phone calls were listened to, but I was told this bishop has written. So I was told that they go to hell as well. So you were, I was completely taken over by them. I was full of fear. I was afraid of my life, that I'd bring everyone to hell with me. It was desperate. That's all I can say.
It's been over 40 years ago this happened.
Yeah.
And now you've decided to write the book. Why now?
I turned a certain age. I know I don't look it.
You don't?
And you think, you know, what have you done good in your life? And then you think, okay, what needs to be sorted? What needs to be corrected? And the people need to know about religious zealotry, religious servitude, and that is alive and well. And we need to start talking about it. So I have the moral response, and knowing that it's still going on, I have the moral I think that I have, I think I need to start.
You have a responsibility.
Sorry, Matt.
Yeah, no, that's...
Yeah, the moral responsibility to say it out loud. And there's a few of us in it. You know, there's more and more people coming forward, you know.
And I'm sure maybe more will, as a result of the publication of this book. Did you get counselling after you left Opus Dei? How did you manage to rebuild your life?
Well, I came when I left Opus Dei, I was on the floor, really. You know, I had to rebuild my health. I had nothing. I had no qualifications. I had no money. I had no savings. I was a 22-year-old in the mind of a 15-year-old, you know, so I had to very slowly rebuild my life. So one way I did that was through education. So I went back to school, went back to the School of Comm in Cork, did my leaving cert. Three subjects one year, two subjects the next. And I remember I got honours and I was delighted with myself and I did little courses and then, you know, built up my confidence that way. You know, I did have, there was, when I returned to Ballyvona, people looked after me and really brought me into the fold and were very respectful and helped me build my life, you know. So then just education, and a little bit more confidence all the time, you know.
And then a career as a prison officer. Where, given your experiences, did that make you perhaps a little bit more understanding of what it would be like for people, even if they had committed crimes and were sent to prison for punishment of their crimes, but understanding what it would be like for them to be locked up and to be away from their lives?
Absolutely, yeah, 100%, the Irish Prison Service has a very good human rights record, you know, and I was very proud to be part of that team. And I was very conscious of my responsibility in it. But there was a grade of prisoner in the prison called the trustees, you know, and they do all the, they do the cleaning and the, you know, all the bits and pieces around the prison. And they have, but I used to look at those prisoners and I used to say, they had more physical freedom than what we had as assistant numeraries.
Good God.
They could go to school and get an education. We couldn't. They got paid. We didn't. They had contact with their families. We didn't. They could make phone calls. We didn't. So I used to look at them sometimes. I used to say, fair play to you, you know. And they could, a little bit of divilment as well and stuff like that, you know. But if you were to ask me, which would I rather, give me prison any day.
It's an extraordinary story, an extraordinary book. Serve, My Last Years at the Heart of Ireland's Opus Dei. Anne-Marie Allen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Matt. Much appreciated.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.